stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin, I've heard all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking. Under the cover of my skin.
Welcome to episode number 117, the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us for another week. Welcome to my co-host up in Canberra. I think that was him just cracking a Sticks beer. Bradley Croke, how you going?
Good, mate. Yeah, I've got the Sticks Grapefruit IPA, thanks to Sticks. Got another shipment sent out last week. So, yeah, having a good Australia Day long weekend.
Came at a very good time, that case, didn't it? Just for a bit of festive time of the year.
Yep,
and down in Ballarat, the Victorian 5K champion, Julian Spence. How you going? Victorian country. I missed that bit. As I was saying it, I'm like, I think I missed a word there. Which word was it? Probably the most important one. Welcome
champion
to the show.
Could have been. thanks, mate.
It's good. What's been happening, Julian?
What's been happening? Well, I had Saturday off. That was Saturday off work. That was nice. Saturday. I went to a wedding last week, you know, the one in Sorrento.
Yeah, Hutchies. Long time listener of the show.
Yeah, him and Michelle listens, maybe. I don't know. Michelle might listen.
Yeah, she listens. She told me once in Berlin. They were at Berlin the first time we went there, weren't they?
They were. They come to a party?
Yeah. Michelle's a lawyer or something, isn't she?
Like, really? Yeah, she's way too smart for Hutchie. Way too smart. It's super weird.
very good. You want to talk about your running week? Tell us about this win down in Geelong to finish it off. To cap it.
The win. Yeah. It was pretty windy too. Let me just tell you about it. I should have done this before, you know, get Strava up. Normally Strava's open. I normally spend a lot of time on Strava.
Just trolling everyone in the Australian distance running.
Pretty good on the comments. I wish you could post photos and comments on.
Or GIFs. Yeah. That's what I was thinking the other day.
I want videos. I want to put videos up for every run. You know, I'm good on the photos, but the videos would be even better. So Monday morning, I was having a down week this week because I'd had I'd gone 164, 176, 73, 179. So I was going to drop the mileage a little bit. And so Monday morning, just ran to Radders, did the gym. Monday arvo, ran with. I'm going to take a guess at who this was based on the title. Easy pace with two very slow-witted individuals. I'm going to say this was Freeman and Watto.
Yeah, on my screen it says you're with those two.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Tuesday, just terrible sleep. Listen to Mac Miller. He's a good artist, wasn't he?
Yeah, rest in peace, Mac Miller.
Yeah, he's been gone a while, hasn't he? What, like a year or so?
Got that real good line in one of his songs about John Stockton and the Utah Jazz. You know that?
That's really funny because we're just talking about John Stockton today.
Yeah. Well, it says something like, I'm Stockton and you're Jazz or something like that. I'll find it for you. I'll tell you next week maybe.
All right. Yeah. Wednesday, did a workout down the track. Did three sets of 4x400. And then within the set, I would get them, make them faster. So the first one, 68, 65, 62, 62. It's taking a minute between. And then 400-meter jog into the next set, 69, 65, 63, 61. And then next set, 67, 65, 62, 61. Did that with Matty Freeman, who helped me out a bit, actually, because he would do a bit. He would do the first couple of reps, like 300 meters or so of it, behind me, and then in the next two, he would run 200s, so he'd take me through in like 31 or so. It's quite good. Nice to have a big body out there. He's built like a shit house, this bloke. Huge fella. Nice big back to tuck in. That was it. Wednesday night, I also didn't double because I went to the wedding. So went over to Sorrento. And then the morning woke up, a bit dusty, ran through Sorrento, like, you know, luxury home, villas, went into Tommy Bahama, nearly bought a shirt. Oh, you know Tommy Bahama, boys?
Nah.
Oh,
you wouldn't. You blokes wouldn't, but geez, I look good in this shirt.
I'm gonna Google. What's it called? Tommy Bahama.
Tommy Bahama, yeah, super like Noosa, the OC kind of setup.
Yeah. Over mine and Brad's head.
It's not not next to the Fox store, is it?
No, you wouldn't know about this stuff. Yeah. There's no Fox product in Sorrento. Up the road a bit there is, like Frankston Way.
Is it one of those stores in Ballarat, or is it just a beach thing?
Mate, not in Ballarat. They wouldn't know what to do with it.
$200 for like a shirt, button-up polo shirt.
They're super preppy. They're like, they got parrots on them. I'm a big parrot fan, and so I wanted one with parrots on the front, and they didn't have my size. They're all oversized, built for big fat white men. I'm getting there. I'll fill them out soon. Thursday, ran with some surges. Oh, no, that's Friday, sorry. Friday, ran with some surges, did the gym. Friday night, ran home, and then had this race. So woke up in the morning, did a bit of a shakeout, some strides, did a country champs 5K. So this was a very prestigious title. You ever won this, Brady?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Actually, so you know about it.
I know on your Facebook timeline where it comes up, like your memory is from 5 years ago. Had a picture of me on the podium winning that race, actually.
Yeah, who'd you beat?
I don't know. I know Andy Buchanan was in the race. Jared
Clifford. You beat Andy Buchanan?
Yeah, it was pretty loaded. Like most of those guys have gone on to win para champs, win half marathons over in Japan. This is like before they all got good, though. You got to get in early, Moose.
Clifford would have been fucking 12.
Yeah, he was already young, these kids. I was like 25, had a beard. Just, you know, they probably weren't even in the same race. They were probably the junior race when it's thrown in all in one.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Got my name on the trophy, yeah.
Only the best win, this one. Yeah. So, ran 14:30 and kind of had a bit of a plan to run around that time. That's where I thought I was at. So, that was a medium result. Wasn't great, but wasn't bad either. Did do the work. At the start, Michael Marantelli, he took the first two laps. They were in 70s. 70-70, so it was a bit slow straight up. Then I went to the front and ran maybe 67, I think. And then he went, and as he went past, I asked him to keep the pace on. And so I asked him to run 68 again, which he did. But then the second one, he dropped back. And so that was just me from then on. And I kind of got a little slower. In the end, ran 67 last lap to run 14:30. Matty Gunther was second, 14:45, so Run Strong Online Coaching, 1-2, left, right, bang. You know how they finish that one.
Yeah, all the runner PB coaches are running in the Australian champs in a couple of weeks, Brad. Not the big country champs running 14:30s. Anyway,
stay local, support local.
Yeah, there was a bit of a conversation if like the full-scale batch rocked up, Buchanan, me, Guy Walters, Brad Croker, you probably would have been in fifth.
A fucking bat sent their big dog and he didn't produce. The beast took.
Yeah, he was just doing a threshy for the 10K.
Yeah. That's putting a bit of pressure on me. The bat sending all these flogs, sending me messages all week, trying to stir me up. Didn't work.
You're a bit scared, I reckon. He's in good form. Real. So he didn't go with you at all. He just eased back.
No, he was there on the first lap, then decided to play it safe. Anyway, no one talks about fucking fourth place, mate. Let's move on.
Oh, who was third? So Moose Marantari. Yeah, gotcha.
Was he? Or the Beast was third?
Oh, was he?
I don't know. Who cares?
Not first, you
so,
last.
So based on last week, remember how we had that chat about you having potentially a crack at the 2:11:30 and trying to work on your speed? How did you come out of this race with that sort of, with that performance? What was your mindset?
Just medium again. I mean, it was basically another time trial in a race setting. Like there's no one, you know, it takes that 4 to 5 laps to go mark of a 5K.
Yeah.
That's when you need the help. You don't need the help on the first 4 laps. You need the help on the last 5 laps. And that's where it just turned into me busting around lane 2 again, lapping everybody. And it was windy. So 14:30 wasn't bad. I mean, it's only like 11 seconds, 12 seconds off my best ever. And I reckon if I got in a race on that night, I would have run around the same.
Yeah. Yeah, given that I know these events, and you would have been spending a whole lot of time lapping people. So it's probably, you take 5 seconds off for that, take 5 seconds off for the wind, take 5 seconds off for not having a race kind of on, you know, someone really pushing you. Probably 14, 15.
Let's not get too carried on. But it was all right.
Just spike up or next percents?
Oh, next percent. I felt like I hadn't raced afterwards. My calves felt that good. Mm. In fact, my calves aren't sore at all. Imagine if I put spikes on, I'd be destroyed. Mm. But I stayed in Anglesey that evening and we had a good group the next day. Ran with, who was it? Jimmy Friend from Geelong come down. Ali, Bree was there. Who else was there? Jared Clifford and his little boy band gang came along with his... the guy that does all the guiding for him, Tim Logan, good fella, him.
According to him, Moose, you are king of the half step.
Hey, that bloke's got something to prove. Every time we went up a hill, he needed to be the first up there. You know what that's a sign of? Insecurity when you're doing that. He's trying to prove his fitness on a Sunday run.
You can't win on this, Brad, because if you let Moose beat you on a hill, he rips into you saying you're shit on hills. But then if you beat him, he rips into you saying you're, like, insecure.
Very true, very true. Notice that.
Yeah. Anyway, I ended up winning. So it was a good long run. I did 32K. I'm sure there's someone else. Oh, Gunther came along as well.
Callum Burns is on Strava here.
Yeah, he did some walking. He was not a strong unit, that fella. He's got some years to put in before he gets the real man strength up. But that was for 145K, ran in the afternoon, you know, Sunday seconds, and had a good week. Now it's time to get fit. 13 weeks from yesterday to the race.
Mm. What's next, Moose? Do you have any
race? There's a 3K in 2 weeks in Ballarat I might do, depending on how it fits in, and then Run for the Kids I want to do. That's a real good road race. Probably, I think it's about 3 to 4 weeks out from the marathon. Mm. Yeah.
You usually don't race much in a marathon prep anyway, do you? Just knuckle down.
No, no. I like those Sunday runs. If I miss a few of them, I get upset.
Mm. Bradley, what have you been doing? Topped 100K for the week?
Yeah, so another consistent week. So I went 100K the week before and 113 this week. And I think I'm almost 20 days in a row. So should be building some sort of fitness. So the Monday, Mulligans was still closed due to fire bans and things like that. So I just ran actually around near the school that I teach at. There's a synthetic oval there. So I did a few laps, not around the synthetic, but just a couple, like a 2 or 3K loop, and then jumped on the synthetic towards the end of the run and did a few strides. So that was just 45 minutes at 4:11s. Went to the gym that afternoon. So I'm back into the gym twice a week. So far it's been Mondays Mondays or either Wednesday or Thursday. Then Tuesday, I was meeting Sean and Em for a minor fartlek, but I was a bit short on time because Viv had an appointment at the hospital. So I didn't actually drive to Sean's place. And Sean's punctuality is not his strong point. We were meant to meet at 8:15, or everyone was meant to start warming up at 8:15, so that's what I did, and I was going to meet him out on the trails, and found out later on that they started warming up closer to 8:30, so I ended up doing a 9K warm-up for the session, which was actually okay because I knew it meant I just had a shorter cool down after the session. The session was modified fartlek. Em rocked up and she was sort of on the verge of a virus, so she almost didn't do the session but then decided just to roll through it. So I ended up being pretty solo for this. So I averaged 3:26s, probably like somewhere around 3:10s for the efforts and somewhere between 3:40s and 3:50s for the floats. But it's that it's a real weird place where they do it. It's like this single track and you pretty much go 6 minutes one way, do a U-turn, 6 minutes back the other way, 6 minutes back out. But it was good. I didn't really look at my watch once, but I did realize after about 15, and I reckon Mona, you get to like that 15 minute mark. And when you're going well, you've got the strength to actually close well and hold it together. And I got to 15 minutes and I'm like, I don't really have the strength at the moment. So I just, struggled a little bit in the last 5 minutes. Then Wednesday morning, Mulligans was open. So I hadn't actually run there since before Christmas. So it was awesome to get out there. Just plug the headphones in, bit of Spotify, and got through an hour in 4:16s. I'll just quickly, my Spotify account includes the likes of The Killers, Sheryl Crow, Roxette, Dolly Parton.
You are so old. You are so old.
Kenny Rogers, The Cranberries.
Cranberries are right.
Amy McDonald, Amy Shark, James Blunt, Johnny Cash, Kenny Rogers.
It's the most random list.
Bit of everything, really.
Party time in Canberra.
Then Thursday, I went to the doctor earlier in the week just because I'd had a blood test for like a year and a half, and obviously running hasn't been going great and just been feeling a bit tired. So I had a blood test first thing Thursday morning. So to get a run in the morning, I had to pretty much run from home and meet Viv at her work and then bring Lily back home. I ran at 8:30. It was already 30 plus degrees and 70k an hour winds. It was feral. I sent you boys through that photo that day of the dust storm that came through. So that was just 11k at 4:17s. Friday, I did a session in the afternoon. I just figured my body's a bit better in the afternoons, and I went out with like really, really low expectations. I said to myself, I'll do either a 3 or 4K tempo and I'll do some sort of shorter reps afterwards. And I think going in with low expectations was good because session actually felt better than I thought it would and came away with a little bit of confidence. Averaged like 3:20s for the 4K, jogged for 3 minutes at sort of 4:30 pace, and then, 4 30-second efforts off a minute jog and, 30-second reps, although GPS is never that accurate on 30-second reps, but we're sort of sub 250. So that was a good run for me. Friday night, stayed up and watched the Federer versus John Millman match, which finished at 1 a.m. I got sucked in. I was just like, oh, I need to go to bed, but ended up watching all five sets. Got out for 56 minutes at Mulligan's, 4:19s. And then Sunday, my first two-hour run in a while, met Andrew McGowan. And it was super humid here in Canberra. Like, we normally have really extreme heat, but it's quite dry. But we started at 7 o'clock and it was probably 20, 21, 22 degrees, but it was 90% humidity. And for the first hour 15 of the run, I was fine. But the last 45 minutes, I was just cooked. And it sort of made me realize that this time of year, I've always struggled in February. Training's always been pretty shit based on the weather. And then you come out of it, come March, April, and you get some cooler weather, you're actually going a lot better than you think you are. And I think it's a lesson out there for a lot of the listeners. Like, a few of the people that I coach live in Brisbane, and they've got extreme humidity up there, and they sometimes feel like they're actually losing fitness. Like, they go out and smash a park run, but it's like 27 degrees and 90% humidity, and like, even if they're in good shape, then there's no way they're going to run as fast now as they will come April. So this time of year, you just need to lower your expectations a little bit, I think, based on the weather.
You tell them to slow their running down?
Oh, yeah. Like, well, they still go into these races expecting to run PB. So it's more about lowering your expectations for those sort of races if the weather's feral.
And don't compare workouts to middle of winter.
Yeah.
Training pace has got to be slower. Jogging's got to be slower. I mean, it's good to put these. I think it's good, perfect time to use a heart rate monitor for conditions like that, just because it's so hard. It's so easy to cook yourself when it's so humid.
Yeah, but I think the message I was trying to get across was don't be too harsh on yourself, because you're often fitter than you think this time of year. It's just that the weather's playing a factor, and you come out of it stronger at the end of summer. So 113K and just ticking along.
Just ticking along, stringing them together. That's good. That's all you need to be doing, isn't it? Just putting them together.
Yeah, my mentality at the moment is tick off a couple of sessions, get in a long run, get to the gym twice a week, not worry so much about any other runs, and hover somewhere between that sort of 110 and probably 120K for the next few weeks. And actually, my goal is probably to string together 100. If I can do 100 consecutive days, I think I'll be fit.
Oh, for sure. I'll run through my week. Kicked it off Monday, 8K in the morning, 10K in the afternoon. Was meant to do 14K in the afternoon, but it just felt a bit flat out jogging and a bit dizzy. I think, was it last week we recorded at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon? I think that was that day. And I missed the lunch, I think, and then I was just, didn't eat enough and got a bit dizzy out there. So come home a bit earlier, which is a bit of a rookie mistake. Tuesday, I was going to Bendigo to visit my grandparents. And Andy Buchanan was doing a workout down there, and like Guy Walters and Callum Lang and Rose Davies have all been down there because they didn't go to Falls Creek because of the fire. So I think you had spoken to Andy Moose and kind of said to me, jump in Andy's workout, and I wasn't actually sure what that was until you told me what it was. So originally I was down to do 600 meter reps, but instead I jumped in with Andy and it was 5x800 meters. Off 90 seconds, and then a lap jog, and then 5x200s off 45 seconds and a lap jog, and then he was doing like a progressive 1200 meter rep to finish off, so three laps, whereas I was just gonna go for two laps. Ended up going for a K of that last rep, so it was so good just having a big group of people. There was heaps of like junior Bendigo bats down there as well, probably 15 junior kids. And, six or seven of us doing this main workout as well. We ended up hitting 216. Andy led the first rep. Guy took the second one. We were aiming for 216, so Andy's usually pretty good on pace. Guy took the second one in 214. I took the next one in 216. And then Andy took the last two in 215 and 217. And then we did that lap jog and then hit 32, 30, 30, 30, and 29 for the 200s. And then the way they were doing this 1200 was to pick up the pace each lap. So we did the first lap in 67, and then I think the next lap in 64, and then I got to a K in 242, and they ended up closing, I think, 58, 59 to run a pretty good 1200. Guy and Callum, that's probably worth noting, they were racing Vic Myler's club, so they only did three 800s with us and then did a couple of fours while we were finishing off the 800-meter reps. But yeah, those boys wound it down. They're pretty impressive watching some of them train. And Rose, she was off the back of us she was there for the 200s that we were doing, like pretty much just punching 30s. And then she jumped in after we did the 67, the first lap. Her and Callum jumped in when we kind of ran that 64. And then, they were pretty solid at training as well. They're good, good workouts like that. I really enjoy just having other people. And really enjoyed like mixing it up, like dropping down to some 200s, then going back to a 1200. I know Scott Westcott does that a bit, a couple of times when I've trained with Andy, similar kind of workouts like that. And he probably doesn't get enough. He doesn't coach a lot of people, Scott Westcott, but the people he coaches are running pretty well at the moment. So hats off to him for coming up with workouts like that. Did 8K in the afternoon at 4:39 pace, just pretty chilled. Wednesday, did 16K in the morning, 8K in the afternoon. Thursday, I was meant to do this workout Friday, but I had a bit of a busy weekend, so I moved this to Thursday. So I had one less day of recovery, and probably noticed it a bit. It was 15K, but progressing at every 5K. So the first 5K was meant to be at 3:25, the second 5K at 3:20, and the third 5K at 3:15. I kind of just struggled like getting some rhythm. Like I just found I couldn't lock in. It was just a bit too hot early and then a bit too slow late and just a bit all over the place. Like I ended up still running 3:19 average for the 15K, but like in the 3:20s, I felt like I was rolling 3:15s easy, and then it was hard to hit the 3:15s later on. And just, I don't know, I was too fixated.
You've just gone too quick. I'm looking at it here.
Yeah, I was fixated on the watch as well. Yeah. Like I'm looking at the K splits pop up, and I'm looking at it five times a K, and I just had to relax. It was, you got it there.
I'm looking at it. You're going way too quick.
Yeah, and that's, I don't know, like, yeah, because I've pretty much gone like 3:21s. 3:20s, 2s through the first 5K. But then when I've picked it up, I've ended up running almost the last 5K in that middle 5K. And right, then yeah. It just felt yuck, and it was raining and humid and a bit of a kick in the teeth a bit, because I finished it going, shit, there's no way I can run that pace for 42K. Like, that really hurts trying to do it for 15K. And I know on the show last week, I was kind of like, give me 20K at marathon pace and I'd be able to do it easy because I've been doing quicker stuff. But that... yeah, it was just yuck. I don't know.
But then last week I said like 20K at marathon pace is actually pretty hard because you don't get any of those breaks. It's that constant sort of effort. But Yeah, but you said it was hot and humid, and you got to take that into consideration as well as what we just spoke about.
Did a hard workout on the Tuesday.
And yeah, that's probably the main thing that I rolled this 24 hours earlier than it needed to be. So, but it was good to get done, and it's good just to try and lock in. Like, they're mentally pricks of workouts to do by yourself as well. Like, I think I got more out of just staying out there. In the afternoon, Thursday, went for a jog, bumped into Benny Walker, talked to him for about 25 minutes in the middle of the jog, so it made it pretty easy, good break in the middle there. And Friday morning, did my long run, so met up with Archie. This was the thing I was really concerned about, actually, looking at my program for the week. Kind of 30K last week was just, like, hard, and I probably got to 26, 27K and was counting down the last K, and when I saw 34 on the program for this week, I was like, oh, this is going to be a real battle. And met up with Archie. He did the first 25K with me and just felt amazing. Like, it just flowed, felt fit. After he finished at 25K, I kind of just even rolled down to a couple, like 345s, 350s for the last 2 or 3K, and finished feeling like I could have been out there for another 5 or 6K. Like, it felt pretty chilled out and pretty good. And then jogged Friday night, was in charge of park run Saturday morning. So did that, and then just did an easy hour. Legs were pretty beat up. And then had some mates up for, we're calling it our 10-year uni reunion. So we've all been teaching for 10 years, and a couple of tradie mates in there as well. And went out in the river and had some beers and listened to the Hottest 100 and kind of moved my week around so I wasn't tired from a workout. And B, didn't have a long run hanging over my head for the Sunday morning and could really just enjoy the day and be social and have a couple of beers without any kind of consequences having it hanging over me. And then Sunday, got out for an easy 8K with 10-second hill sprints in there as well. So 160K for the week. Pretty good week, actually. I put on my Strava Moose Howe this week, kind of had everything. Like, it had speed, had hill strides, had a good long run, had a marathon-specific workout, and it was 160Ks. Like, this is, when you're writing a week, I reckon this is a perfect week.
There are no perfect weeks, mate. That is a myth.
This is a good week. These are the kind of weeks, if you could string, hopefully I can string 10 of these together, going forward. And found out today that I've got to start at the Melbourne Track Classic in the 5K. Just not sure if I'm in the A or the B race. So, next Thursday night, which is like, what's that, 10 days away? I'll have a go over 5K again, which should be good.
That is good.
And that's a good
workout. Who else has entered?
I know Andy Buchanan's there. I know Guy Walters is there. That's all I know, actually. Yeah, just because I was doing that workout with those guys on Tuesday and they said they're both nominated. And, I was talking to Andy today. They've both got to start.
Good. I wonder if the real big dogs will be there.
Well, it's got that Australian title attached to it, doesn't it? Where you have to, like, if you can win and you get the time somewhere in Europe, you're automatically on the team.
Yeah, well, that's what you want. That's a big, there'll be heaps of people there, surely. Jess Hull's coming back for that.
Yeah, I saw that post-race interview for her. I kind of don't mind which heat I'm in. Like, I'm happy to be in the B heat. Well, they're calling them time finals, but they're not. It's like 15 good guys against 15 guys making up the numbers. But I'm happy to be in the B race and just, tee up 4 or 5 of us, just trying to break 14 minutes and just, share the pace, running 67 laps and see if we can dip under. Or whereas if you're in the A heat, you're just going and hanging on.
Yeah, well, both would be good. Exactly. Like,
it's a win-win. I mean,
if it's going to be a 13:30 race up front, you probably don't want to be in the A race, do you?
Yeah, because you might not have much of an option.
Yeah.
So, see what happens. But anyway, watch your space there. Should we thank some Patreon supporters, eh?
Yeah. I'll thank Jess Lowe from London. She's run Chicago Marathon, 3:12, three marathons included, London and New York and Chicago. Wait, what have you written there?
She ran 3:12 at Chicago in 2018, has ran 3 marathons, including London and New York.
So she's going for the world six.
Yeah, you'd say so. It's a pretty good 3 to knock off, isn't it?
Yeah, or you wouldn't want to go to a local one anymore because she'd be bitterly disappointed. She's run 85:21 for half, 38:55:10, 5K 18:47, and she's run 3K in 10:48.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jess.
All the way from London, that's always good. Brad, who you got?
Yeah, well, my shout out goes to France. So my shout out's to Lindsay Anki Senak. She's from Bozelle in France. She finished ninth female in a time of 3:16 at the Marathon International of Toulouse Metropole in Toulouse, France. Website in French, so apologies if not accurate. Looks like she's also run 39:22 for 10K and 1:26:25 for the half marathon. So thanks for your support, Lindsay.
Thanks, Lindsay, for your support. Matt Sullivan, I'm thanking you. Used to live in Echuca, now lives in Bond Beach. He's from Wonthaggi in Victoria originally. That triathlon I was talking about last week, boys, he won it outright. The whole three disciplines, doing the whole triathlon. So he's a pretty good competitor over the triathlon. He's ran a half marathon in 1:19, 10K in 34:38, and 5K at 16:36. So thanks, Matt, for your support on Patreon. Probably signing up using those that prize money from the Echuca Triathlon last weekend, I reckon. Good timing for that stuff. Running news, boys. Moose, tell me about Jessica Hull.
Well, she ran the 1,500-metre Australian record, indoor record, in Boston. Melissa Duncan had it from 2016, and she ran 4:06 there, so I think she broke it by 2 seconds. She's raced the Melbourne Track Classic, which doubles as the Aussie champs, of course, 5K. This means, does this mean that she'll double at the Olympics, running the 5K and the 1500? She's going to do world indoors as well. And interestingly, she outkicked Coco, who is a 3:58 girl, 8:23K, and 14:26 runner. So she is the fittest of those two at the moment, from what we saw. What does that mean? She'll run at the Melbourne Track Classic. Well, she doesn't have to go for the time there. She's already got the time. So what she needs to do is win the race. So I don't think it'll be that fast.
And then if she's doing this for an indoor mile, but she did get outkicked at Albie Thomas, didn't she?
That was a while ago now, though. Yeah, like, she's strung together a good, six weeks or so.
True, yeah. You wouldn't want to come up to her with 2 laps to go. She's out kicking Coco. She'd be out kicking anyone.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I watched the post-race interview. I think the Bankstown guys put it on their Facebook. And she kind of said she's coming back to Australia to do the 5K, back to the USA to train, then to do world indoors, back to Australia for nationals, back to America. So clocking up some hours on aeroplanes the next couple of months. Jordan Guzman, past guest as well. He ran 7:49 indoors for 3K as well. Runs for Malta now. So surely that will qualify him for the world indoor champs. So last we saw of him was at Zatopek. So in good shape over the shorter distances as well. Mm-hmm. Other big bit of running news, Lisa Waitman. She raced the International Osaka Women's Marathon yesterday afternoon. And she jumped from fourth spot in the kind of qualifying time period for the marathon with the females to second. She finished in 2:26:02. She was 24th at halfway when she went through in 73:38 and then come home in 72:24 to finish fifth. So absolutely mowed down some people in that second half to second fastest time she's ever ran for the marathon. As a 41-year-old now, I think I read on Facebook today somewhere. And if she gets picked in this Australian team for the Olympics, it will mean she's only the fourth Australian ever to have repped Australia in four Olympic marathons. So Deke's done it, Mona's done it, and Lisa Ondiecki has also done it. So Sinead's still got that 2:25 out in front. Ali's 2:26:21. So what's that, 19 seconds behind. And Millie Clark's now moved to fourth with that 2:28.
Didn't Sinead run 2:24?
At London. I don't think so. I put this on, let me look this up. Sinead Diver. I think it was 2:25, wasn't it? 2:24. I think you're right, Moose.
2:24, I reckon. Yeah.
I think you're right. Ripping Sinead.
Anyway, yeah, no.
2:24:11. Yeah, she's well in front of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for picking that up.
Well, I know. If someone got my time wrong, I'd be pissed.
Sorry, Sinead. The beer got me. I'm blaming sticks.
The big thing to come out of this is realizing, firstly, how good Australian women's marathoning is at the moment. Like, I know we've said it before, but there are going to be a couple of very, very, very good athletes miss out on the Olympic marathon, and they would have made any other Olympics, I reckon. It's so competitive.
Well, Millie was top 20 at the Rio Olympics. And now she's, you know.
Don't count her out.
I'm not
And you still got Jess Stenson as well, who, you know.
She raced on the weekend. She ran a 3K over in Adelaide.
What'd she run, do you know?
10.03 or something like that. You know that team system thing they have going on over there? Synergy, I think it's called.
It's not bad, not long after giving birth.
Oh, that's a pretty good, it's a pretty quick return. And Jess isn't like the speedy 3K runner anyway. Like she's, she's
going to just hold it. Jess entered a marathon?
She was on the show on the weekend, actually, and she was just staying there doing stuff week by week at the moment. So I'd say if she enters something, it will be on pretty short notice when they know she's right to go. She kind of hasn't pinned out anything yet. But, see what happens week by week.
There'll be two really good girls that will miss out.
I believe Millie's running Rotterdam, and that's maybe 1 or 2 weeks before London, I think. And then Ellie and Sinead are going back to London, obviously. So they'll be able to counterpunch. I mean, it doesn't matter for Sinead, but for instance, Millie goes, drops a 2:25, then there is still a chance that Ellie can run another time faster. So it's pretty exciting, really, for the running, Australian running community to be watching this. Mm. And this is how people get better. This is how the sport lifts.
100%.
When
the goalposts move. Rotterdam's first weekend of April. So when's London? What date?
26th.
Okay, so still it must be 3 weeks in between.
So, yeah, I probably should just talk about how Lisa ran that negative split marathon and come back and sort of highlight that is the way that you run marathons. If there's anyone out there suggesting that positive splitting is how to do it, then another example against that. And she had a really good group. So by the splits, up until 25K, there were still 9 people in the group she was running with. And that's perfect conditions. It was just looked like ideal. It would have been maybe a race. I'm not sure how fit Millie's is, but it would have been good to see them both there.
Do you think having Millie's time to just beat, though, it looked like she almost was running at 2:27:15, 2:27:25, for the first 30K and just aiming to be under Millie's time, and then obviously getting a 35K comfortably and just find a minute in that last 7K is a nice way to run as well?
I think it just from the way that she executed the race, you would think that she was aiming to run underneath, run the safe route, but look at this is what happens in those races. You can eat up time late in a marathon. You can just run away from people, and you can drop seconds, tens of seconds, minutes.
Only talking to Hamish Beaumont today, there's only 3 women in the history that have run 4 Olympic marathons as well, from all countries. So that's a long time to be up and making teams, 12 years. So pretty good achievement to be able to string together the training, avoid injuries, and get those singlets if it happens. Still some time. See what Millie and Ali. Must be a weird situation at least to be in, because Millie could then go quicker than both of them, and then Ali could go quicker than Millie.
Yeah, but the time's on the board.
Yeah, true.
She's got the runs up there. She's back in the clubhouse watching now. That's where you want to be.
I probably more meant that she's just got to sit on it now for a longer period of time. Whereas the other girls still have to lace up again.
I think she should be confident and will be confident.
You don't think she'll have something as a backup? I think you said that last week, that there'll be still time if she has to go again. Does she enter something and just...
I don't think so. I reckon you would... If you were going to go again, maybe you put your name down somewhere, very late, but I don't think it's required. And I don't think you would prepare for it like that. I think Lisa starts preparing for the Olympics.
Moose, we can cut this out as well, but there was one of those shows you did with Ali and Sinead, and Ali seemed like she was super keen to do another marathon, and you were kind of saying that she would have been right with her 2:26:21. Now that she's entered London, obviously, and having another go to get that time lower, you're kind of happy that she's having another shot?
I don't think she needs to be worried. There's a big a big gap between 228 and 226 low. And it, like, Lisa was always going to be like a chance to run that because she's already run it before and she is a class athlete. So we, like, we kind of knew, like, Lisa can do that, and she did it safely, and it, obviously she had a great race, but it looked like she did it quite kind of comfortably in how she negative split it, and we kind of knew that that was going to be there. The question is really around Millie, and I don't know her training, and I don't know her at all, but from past results and sort of how it's been going lately, you still look at that and think that's a big drop to make in a marathon. And Ali has a backup. She's a lock for the 10K, basically.
Yeah. Like, because I've mentioned that a couple of times, Moose, about she's got the 10K. And where's, like, at you as her coach, if, for example, she was fourth on the marathon ranking list, obviously she's not going to be disappointed because she's going to the Olympics, but she'd prefer to run the marathon over the 10K?
Yeah, she's made no, like... Yeah, she's put that out there from day one, saying I want to run the marathon at the Olympics, and that's my first preference and that's my priority. But, like, if she gets knocked out, then she goes, well, shit, I'm going to the Olympics. And the 10K, like, you saw what she did at Doha, where she took a massive chunk off her PB. She was competitive in the second pack. She ran 31:18, which was a huge run, and is it, like, there's potential to go and do that again and shake that up. So
yeah, and the atmosphere and the atmosphere of a 10K in the stadium would be awesome as well.
Yeah, especially like village life in Tokyo as well. Like, that, there's definitely an upside to going down that path. But in her heart, it's the marathon.
Yeah.
Timetabling, like, could she do both?
No, she won't do both. I think the 10K is. Well, they changed the date of the women's marathon, I think, put it back a week later.
Okay. You're right, though. Lisa just had to go out there and run, you know, around her PB time, and she kind of did that with her second fastest time ever, whereas Millie's got to go 2 minutes quicker than whatever she's ran before. So, going to be interesting. I might have a front row seat of it at Rotterdam. She might beat me. See what happens.
She might pay you to do some work for her.
2:28. I'll probably go out early, blow up, and probably come in at about the same time she will. So, yeah, all good. Brad, tell us. Nah, I'm used to running the program now. Those days are gone. Brad, tell us about.
Yeah, you'll be right.
Tell us about this 5K New South Wales state champs.
Yeah, so there was a real, national feel to it. So the race was won by Sam Clifford from Tasmania, 18-year-old, in 14:16:95. Kieran Tall. New South Welshman, second in 14:17:73. And Liam, I'm not sure if it's Bowden or Bowden. He's part of Jacko's Gold Coast run crew up there, 14:17:87. So it was a really weird race. There was a good pack through 3K. And then about, 1,200 to go. Kieran Tall, like, left everybody else for dead, and it looked like he was going to run away with it. And then he started just to slow and let, I guess, the other three guys sort of get back on, but then was able to still have the legs to close in. Like, the winner closed in 56 for the last 400, and their top three all ran under 58 for the last 400. So it was a weird race to watch, but yeah. And I should also give a shout out to Jordan McLennan. He's part of the Inside Running Frothers team from Steigen. He finished fourth in 14:26, which was a PB. So did you guys watch it?
Yeah, I just flicked through. Kind of I watched and saw the move from Kieran Tall, and then I watched from there when they caught him back up. And Liam Bowden or Bowden or however pronouncing his last name, he outkicked me easy at Zatopek. Like, he was with us with a K to go, and he can close a race, that guy. And I thought he was pretty smart. Like, it didn't work for him in the end, but when he went, it was a pretty big move and kind of towed Clifford and Kieran Tall through, which was, it was an exciting race. A couple of Victorians up there as well. It was a pretty loaded field when you looked through the results and looked at the names. So doing good stuff up there in New South Wales. Commentary is good on those races too. They call it just like a horse race. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, Matt and James do a really good job of the commentary up there. And I believe it was quite humid on the night, which probably helped the Queenslanders a little bit. I was chatting to Jordan today, and he said it was humid, but compared to you know, Gold Coast, it was fine. But I think some of the New South Wales runners found it quite tough.
Good to hear you checking in with Jordan, by the way. I like that. A couple of months on Steigen, just making sure he's going right.
Trying to poach him from Jacko, it sounds like.
No, I'm trying to pay him performance bonuses.
That's right, yeah. He did say he'd done that. Women's race.
Yeah, so in the women's race, unfortunately, remember I said during the week, Em almost didn't train on Tuesday. She came down with the virus on Wednesday, and I messaged her on Saturday to sort of wish her luck, and she said, oh, I've been in bed since Wednesday, and I've eaten about two pieces of toast in that time. So she was a scratching for the race, which meant Paige Campbell pretty much led from gun to tape. She took it out in 15:49. Lauren Reed was second in 15:57, and Katie Gamble from Victoria was third in 16:18. So, shame for Em. Not great, I guess, for her preparations for nationals in a couple of weeks, but hopefully she's back firing soon.
Mm. Some good results. Bit of a business time of the season at the moment, isn't it? A few races rolling through. It's all good. All the states doing stuff. There was some Vic Myler stuff as well. I've just realised that. Haven't got it here. Georgia Griffiths was super impressive in the 800, though. Super windy night at Box Hill. 2:02, she ran probably run of the night for sure there. Might see if we've got some results maybe next week for that. Listener question, Brad?
Yep. So this week's listener question. Hi, I just signed up to Patreon as I couldn't listen to this for any longer. Anyway, guys, wish I could swap our weather for yours right now. One question. I'm training for a marathon in April. I can't do double days with work in that. What's the fundamental difference between doing 19 kilometres with some intervals chucked in against doing 11K, a decent hard session, and a 7K easy later on that day? Where's the benefit? And that question comes from Dave Loth. So thanks, Dave. So I guess he's basically saying, is it better to do 19K in one run or 11, doing a double of 11 and 7?
Doesn't sound like Dave has much choice, to be honest. When he puts it like that, he said, I can't do double runs.
Yeah.
And so you make do with what you've got,
yeah.
Dave. Like, there's not a lot of us who can do the absolute ideal training. I know I would prefer to do strength work on a workout day, but I can't fit it in. You two blokes can do whatever you want because you guys don't do any work. But
hey, time for
most
the gym.
Don't run much either.
Most athletes out there have to adapt around their life, I guess. So although there might be differences, Dave, you just do what you do, and it's going to be better to do that 19K than it is to do 11K and miss the second run. I guess the big difference is 19K with intervals is a lot more stressful on the body than 11K with a slow jog in the afternoon. And you can't do that day in, day out. So you're probably just putting yourself through a bit more stress. If you can pull it off, then great. I think you get a real benefit from running like 80 to 90 minutes as a single session. That's pretty good going. But I think I would, like, my body would prefer to have the mileage broken up into 2 days during the week if I can pull it off.
I'm assuming that on the weekend he has maybe a little bit more flexibility, where maybe he has one day where he can actually get in a longer run than 19 kilometres. And if that was the case, then I reckon he'd be better off doing a couple of days at 19K and a long run, and then the other days just as 11. Even training for a marathon, you're better off having the majority of your mileage in singles than doubles, because that's going to strengthen up your legs and prepare you for the marathon better than lots of shorter runs anyway.
But higher risk with injury, that's what you were saying, weren't you, Moose?
I think so.
That's why you would double.
Yeah.
So that's why I'd go a 19K day and then just go a 7K day the next day, and then, you know, and then 11K and then maybe another 19 day.
So much impact on your lifestyle and what you can fit in and what you can't fit in and what your family's doing or your job or whatever it is, and just working around that. And even, like, I know now sometimes you got that second run plan, and that's the first thing that goes if the baby kind of is unsettled or you can't get out or the weather's 48 degrees or whatever it is. Like, if you've nailed that hour worth of work in the morning, missing that 7K in the afternoon is not going to kill you. Whereas, getting that morning in and then having life settled is much more important than being stressed trying to hit that second run of the day, I think.
And this is important too, because a lot of even people that I coach struggle with this, is when they see a schedule or a running, like a their prescription for the week, and they go, oh, I've got a 40K hard long run on Sunday, and then I've got 2 8K runs on Monday. Don't jam them together and run for 16K.
Yeah.
Because the whole purpose of that day is recovery, and you're, those 2 8K easy runs are actually like promoting recovery and helping that, rather than trying to build fitness the day after, like a big hard effort. So running 16K at a really easy pace might be another 80 minute run for some people. That's actually not helping you recover. That's stressing you even more. So don't get in the habit of just seeing a daily mileage and just trying to do it all at once.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. You had that for me last week, actually, when after that half marathon, the day after was like 8K morning, 8K afternoon. And because I knew I couldn't do the afternoon one, I was like, oh, I'll just put them together and do 16K. And then Brad and I were like, nah, I'll just do 10K in the morning. Just that's a recovery day. And just skip the afternoon. That's the thing. Like, when life gets busy and things come up, don't try to put it together and stress your body. Mm. Just can it. And that's sometimes harder for people to do. Like, I often say to people, like, who might message me saying, hey, man, I'm going to miss this run, or I'm feeling flat, or whatever it is, they almost sound a bit guilty. And you're like, no, you actually, this is a brave thing you've just done now. Like, actually identifying that the best thing for you to do is not go out and run now, and actually putting up the flag a bit and saying, I'm tired, or I'm getting sick, or whatever it is.
Well, even you're guilty of that, Brady. Look at your last week. You had things on the weekends. You tried to condense things a bit.
Yeah, whereas I know what I'm doing, so I can pull it off. I think so.
Does he, Moose?
That's the only reason why. And like, I spoke to Moose because we were recording an ad about it for another episode, and I was like, yeah, just don't pay attention to my Strava. I can take it from here, I reckon. But I would not recommend people doing that. I still got there, but I was smart with it. I wouldn't recommend people doing that themselves unless you know what you're doing.
Like the 20, what was it? 24K Friday into, or Thursday into a no, it was a 30K Thursday into the 34. I'm talking about you last week.
I'm training for a marathon, mate. Got to chase some K's.
Yeah, and he knows what he's doing, Moose. It's all right. He's got
31K one day, next day long run 34K.
Felt good though. I said I felt good there, didn't I? Maybe that's a trick.
Yeah, I don't think you've told me anything about this.
Yeah, but that's, yeah, just talk to your coach, guys. Moose on the loose. Moose on the loose. People who change their programs.
Oh, yeah, well, that's frustrating. Like, but then again, there's some smart people out there who can handle it. Probably not you. You're probably not.
I've got a history of big mileage and stuff anyway. I know what I'm doing. It's not going to break me doing that once. And I'd argue that catching up with your mates and not worrying about running for 2 days is actually good for your mental health around training and just having a bit of a letdown. And yeah.
Depends who your mates are, I guess.
Yeah, my mates are all right. They all buy shoes off you.
I like them.
Should be getting some kudos. Yeah.
So Moose on the Loose, this one here has been like an eternal frustration for me, and it actually does make me super angry whenever I see it. I fucking go off. So when you're, I don't know whether it's like this up your way, but when you go out on a run through the forest or the bush and you see like rubbish that's been dumped by somebody, so instead of going to the tip to dump their household waste or their green waste or like their house reno shit that they were supposed to get a skip for, TVs, mattresses, fridges, anything that costs a bit of money to dump at the tip, they've gone, oh, no, screw that. Let's just go out and dump it in the bush. And what happens inevitably is there's a bit of wind and just scatters shit everywhere. And it's like you are actually running through a rubbish, like a tip, like a landfill. It's fucking disgusting. And it's just the biggest sign of disrespect for the place or the town that you live in, and even for our whole environment and our planet. Can you imagine like driving your ute out into the bush, throwing rubbish like waste into the bush, and then just driving off and not feeling any like tinge of guilt about that? These people are a different breed. They're like a different race of human to me. That's how I feel like when I think about it. I would love to find them doing it one time. Just love to see it in action. And I'll probably do nothing and run away. But it would be satisfying to see him get caught, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's frustrating, especially in a spot where you love running as well. Like, you're like, oh, this is my morning, you know, loop every morning, and now I've got to run past this stuff. You ever gone back and picked some of it up?
There is a group here called the Sunday Sweep, and I've got a lot of respect for them because they get out on a Sunday morning, they go to a different spot in town, they rock up, they do like 50 garbage bags in this one area. And look, I don't do it. I don't go back and pick it up, I'll be honest with you. But these guys do, and big kudos to them.
Yeah. And they're usually like bushwalkers and stuff as well. Like, they use it for the exercise. That's like the group we got up here, because we're close to the river as well. And a lot of our tracks, like if you dump stuff there, it just ends up in the water. Yeah, they'll use it as their morning walk and go along with the sticks. It's good stuff.
Yeah. I've found, there was this one time where I went through it. I was like, fuck, I'm going to have a go through this stuff. I found a bloke's receipts. I found something of his, like a letter and stuff. Took it to the police. I said, this guy's dumping rubbish out there. And they just said, oh, no, we don't know it's his. Any letter could have been put in his rubbish bin, rah, rah, rah. They weren't interested. Yeah. Like, right, okay. So no, you're not going to do anything about it, even if I'm showing you receipts and letters that clearly he's put in his own household rubbish. Not interested.
Bigger fish to fry, those guys in Ballarat.
Yeah, well, there's the car next to it on fire is probably the bigger issue.
and finding your stolen shoes.
Yeah, true. Maybe I'll find them in the bush one day.
Have you gone down the cop station and said, have had any handed in?
No, I haven't. Who the fuck's handing shoes into the police?
Not a bad idea.
You're not really doing much to sell Ballarat in the last few weeks, Moose.
No, this happens everywhere.
Ballarat's favourite child.
This used to happen in Anglesey on the coast. It happened at the Yu Yangs. I see this happen everywhere.
Doesn't happen in Malama. We leave our front door open every night.
Mulligan's flat.
Yeah, it's a fucking fenced off area. You can't get cars in there.
Hey, field of dreams out there.
And you just said Malama, they dump it near the river.
That's a chuka, different side of the river. High social on this end. What's coming up? Melbourne Track Classic Thursday week. Buy your tickets. It costs money to get into that thing. I was looking at it today, hoping I was going to get on the start list so I didn't have to pay to get in the gate. You'll come down and watch me, Moose. Yell out some encouragement from the sidelines. Thursday.
Thursday.
Next Thursday. Maybe some like Steigen encouragement, similar to that night.
Oh, yeah.
Rev me up a bit.
Yeah, I might come down. You need a hand? You need me to pin your bib on or something?
I think you can get a coach's pass. Do you want one?
Oh, yeah, get his hand.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure they give you a coach's pass to get in on their website now. Adults, $12.
Definitely get us a coach's
that's
pass.
That's online special, $15 on the night.
I'll come and yell splits to you.
67.
68, 71, 74.
You're not going to break 14:30, which is my season's best. Marigami, that half marathon's on this weekend as well. Is that this weekend?
Oh, that'll Sinead? Be the one. Yeah, this coming Sunday, this will be the one to watch. It's a big race.
Yeah, I want to throw some times at Ben Chamberlain and James Coleman. I thought Brett Robinson was doing it. Yeah, he is as well.
He is, his too. Name's there. Yeah, that's the one to watch. Has he ever had a real crack at a half, like a full-on fast one?
Don't think so, no. Isn't his half PB when he paced? Fukuoka?
And he just wins Melbourne every year, pretty much.
Yeah.
Ben Chamberlain. Out of is he over in
WA?
Yeah, 29-13 at Zatopek.
Yeah, so but I think it's all eyes on Brett, I reckon, because he's faster than Jack over the 10K, the marathon. You'd be thinking that he'd be looking like mid 60 minutes or something.
And I did see he jumped back on Strava for that 1 week when everybody was donating money for the bushfires based on how many kilometres they ran in the week. And he, I think he averaged like 3 minute Ks for his tempo at Caulfield, like, which is that where they do it, Caulfield?
Yeah, they're grass, yeah, like, holes.
Which is bloody quick around there.
Yeah, watch this space. Ali or Sinead, who's going to win? They going to run PBs, Moose?
I don't know. This is funny because, like, they're bloody fit. Sinead's real fit. Ali's been doing this blue collar rocky stuff out the back in the bush behind Aries Inlet, so it's hard to get a gauge on where she's fully at. Hasn't raced. They'll bang it out. Charlotte Perdue's in that race. Like the Secafine, the Canadian girl at Zatopek, second to Jen. She is in the race too. So there should be some good white girl running there.
Very good. Do they win that? What's the women's? Yeah, did you know? What's the women's usually one in?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to go. Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. Tell us about the interview this week. You got your technique coach on the show. How's this, Brad? You got an old technique coach helping him out.
Yeah, it's obviously working wonders.
He's only been running.
Going to milk everything out of this.
Running well since he had Paul in his corner.
Yeah, well, Paul, you can listen and find out what he does exactly, but he comes down, watches you run, makes a few suggestions on how you can be maybe a little more efficient with your running technique and how you hold your arms and all that, and gives me something to think about during workouts. I've performed well since seeing, I think I saw him after Biwa, so I haven't run faster since seeing him.
But I still feel good. Ballarat 15K.
Oh, yeah. That's probably run of the year, I reckon.
Big country 5K. Doha.
No, Paul's good. Have a listen. You'll get a lot out of it. He's called the Balance Runner on Instagram. So that's where he likes to do his marketing. So get on that.
Even listening to it before it was going to go out, it makes you think about when you're out running, you're like, oh, what am I doing with my technique? Like, why do I have my arms in that spot? And like, that's the one thing I got out of it. It just made me think, oh shit, why haven't I thought about this stuff in the past? Because it is something that I think you guys do a pretty good job of summarizing, that as runners, we just ignore. And you're like, that's just how I run.
And then the analogy with the golfer, that's a very good one. Like, you don't see Tiger Woods going, hey, that's just how I swing. He's working on that shit.
I liked it, Moose, because like, you know how you boys always give me a bit of shit about, you know, if I say covering the ground well, but there's been a few times in recent episodes where you've sort of alluded to that, where you have that flow when you run, which is essentially covering the ground well. So I did find that quite entertaining when you mentioned something along those lines.
Covering the ground well is a hashtag.
It's a thing.
It's going to go viral.
It is a thing, though. Yeah. But this is exactly what he's about, is covering the ground well and flowing. Like when you flow, running is enjoyable.
You should trademark that, Brad, before someone else does and tries to sell it to you in a real dog move.
Yeah. Oof. Have you ever heard the Naughty by Nature song "Feel Me Flow"?
Nah.
Oh, that is what you think about when you hear "Covering the Ground Well." Just think about that song. Maybe we'll put that in the show notes. Whoever does show notes, I don't know how to. Who does that?
Ross still does it. Ross has a brilliant job every week.
Yeah, Roscoe, "Feel Me Flow," Naughty by Nature. It's up there with my favorite songs. I can really when you put that on and you warm up.
Hang on, you just wanted to put the YouTube link into it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Have people watch it and just feel it.
Ross put some PB. Kenny Rogers in there as well, Ross. Thanks.
Ross ran a PB down in Hobart on the weekend, actually. Well done, Ross. A couple of weeks ago, half marathon PB.
I know, Ross.
It's going well, Ross. All right, Brad, what's going up in your life? Back to work this week, mate. We're back on the blue collars. Popped. We'll be there.
We don't go back until next week.
Yeah.
But I'm relief. So I think we're actually going down the coast for a week as of next Thursday, because as a relief, I don't think I'll be called in that first week.
Just won't answer your phone the first week in case they need you.
They won't need me for the first 3 days.
Nah, they do. I said that last year. No one will call me in the first couple of weeks, but they all have meetings and stuff. So you just end up going in. Moose, what are you doing?
This week?
Yeah.
I've got the day off tomorrow and Wednesday. Yeah, I'm not doing a lot of work lately, actually. It's been quite nice.
Well, last time I spoke to Bree, she said that's pretty much the normal for you.
She does do a lot in the store. yeah, but someone's got to do back of house. Someone's got to...
Someone's got to spend the day on Strava.
Got to throw the kudos out. It's part of my marketing plan.
Yeah, you actually have given me a bit of kudos recently. I'm like, he's just getting a bit soft in his old age.
Oh, I feel bad for you. I feel bad every time I see you running. I'm like, oh, poor bloke.
Sometimes I flick through, Brad, and Moose is giving you kudos, and I go, shit, if Moose is giving him kudos, I better give him one as well. Like, just build him up a bit so he gets me across the line as well.
Brady, he's not going real well. This is This is a big for him to get some kudos.
I reckon
he
he's
still
going
gets
right.
The emails come through to get some pump up.
I feel like I'm getting the pity clap.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. I'll stop it then.
Oh, okay.
I'll stop giving you kudos, unless you really deserve it.
If he keeps stringing 100K weeks together, he'll be in good shape for Gels Park in April. That's all we need. Oh.
Div 2, do they even run at Gels Park? Yeah. What do you run, like three people, half lap?
Same as Premier Division, because they want to make you like ready to go up, so you got to run the same amount of people. How's this for a team the other day, though? Brad, Guy Walters, Andy Buchanan, me, The Beast, and this junior, and Archie Reid from Echuca. You know Archie?
So there's only two Bendigo residents in that whole team.
So the slowest guy is like 14:30 for 5K. We'll win the whole thing outright.
Wasn't the Beast Glenn Huntley?
No, he's transferring back to Bendigo this year. All the sons are coming home, we're calling it.
So you've got Andy Buchanan.
Big sponsor this year coming on board to pay for everyone's flights to get down there. I'll be flying from Echuca.
You're just a ring-in. What's going to happen when you... This is like what used to happen in our local footy comp when the bloody Newcombe Footy Club paid for all these players one year and they folded the next year because they've
should
everyone
see some
fucked
of these
off.
Junior kids coming through too. Some good kids coming through. Anyway.
Can't buy a premiership, mate. You can't buy them.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll do our best. If anyone wants to buy any Freddo Frogs, hit me up. I'll mail them to you. All right. See ya, boys.
See ya.
See ya. Just show love to everyone you meet. Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Under the cover of my skin, I've heard all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking. Under the cover of my skin. G'day, Paul McKinnon. Welcome to the Inside Running Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Julian.
Welcome to Ballarat.
Mate, it's probably one of the warmer days that I've had here. The other day, the snows, rain, four seasons, even worse though.
Yeah, you've got the knack of coming down and doing sessions in pouring rain, in shelters.
I've been here, I reckon, a good almost 9 or 10 times. And I think 8 or 9 of those I've needed a down jacket. And I've gone through, this is my second summer, I still need the down jacket just in case.
And even today, it was... not ideal. We still threw a curveball at you. It was a bit smoky, so we had to head indoors to the treadmill.
Speaking to you last week, you were saying, "Oh no, we haven't had any effects, and you know, like we'll be fine this way. It's been not quite cool as well." Get here, nope.
Yeah, no, that's Ballarat. So, Paul McKinnon is your name. The balanced runner is your thing.
Yes, my thing. The business name, I guess. It's funny, isn't it, when you start to see Instagram people and you kind of use those names and you forget their real names. So it's I guess it's a little bit of everything. It's about the business, it's about what I do, about how I see running, and you know, look a little bit more of a holistic approach to it. But essentially, yeah, it's the brand for what I do.
Yeah, so if you're listening now and you're not on a run, you can get on Instagram and find The Balanced Runner, at The Balanced Runner, and then you'll know a little bit more and you'll be able to follow along a bit better. And we'll get into that stuff later, but for now, why don't we find out, Paul McKinnon, what is your background? What is your, like, in sports, in education, like, what have you done?
Yeah, probably a little bit different from the regular people you have on. Background in sport was hockey, and up until probably 3 years ago, played that at an elite level or at a pretty competitive level. And, you know, hockey family started when I was 4. By the time I was 15, 16 in the State Academy in Canberra, moved to Melbourne for hockey, kept playing. So probably played about, I think it was almost 13, 14 years of National League. Played overseas professionally for about 6 years. Went to a couple of Indoor Hockey World Cups. So played for Australia in indoor hockey. Yeah, so that was always my sport. Education-wise, PE teaching degree, so Bachelor of Education, Physical Education, and majored in Sports Science. So that's probably more the education or the formal education side of things.
Yep, okay. And your interest in running, where did that come from?
Always from a young age. Like I probably wasn't good at running as a hockey player. Like growing up, I was a late developer, so I had to rely on knowledge of sport, skill. But once I got to about 14, 15, 16, realized that I need to be better at running and just started running and really enjoyed it and sort of started a bit of an interest and passion in running outside of hockey. And always it was supplementary to what I was doing with hockey.
Just jogging? You just went out jogging? Yeah. Or workouts?
Initially it was just jogging. So it was like, go out and run, you know, at that age, probably 5, 6K, 7K, or something like that, which, you know, comparably to runners at the same age, very, very minor. But in addition to the running, then started to realize that for hockey, it was, you know, repeat effort. It was, you know, we put ourselves deep into a box and come out quickly. So it was learning that that was going to be more beneficial.
Yep.
And something I really enjoyed. But it wasn't, it was probably more... I was telling someone this story the other day that, you know, when you have this conversation about if you could play any sport in the world, you know, like what would it be? And a lot of the time you're saying, you know, golf, tennis, quarterback, NFL. I genuinely used to say I'd love to be an elite 5, 10K runner. You know, like probably shows a little bit more of my intelligence. I could have picked something earning a lot more money, but that was what I was just really interested in. And yet I was playing hockey and I remember it really clearly. I still do. Like, I'd still love.
What is it? The feel?
I think the purity of it. Mm. You know, like the purity of the training required. You know, the talent required. What you need to do, and then the actual execution of it, whether it be at a high level or even now. Like, I mean, we've spoken about before. Like, working out. The competitive edge of me is probably lost a little bit because of the amount of time I spent and how much I put into the hockey. But I still love the purity of the running side of it, even just going for a run. It's not always for me PVs or racing. It's actually, I just genuinely enjoy the movement.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably what tied into that was probably the underlying feeling of it, whilst then you go with the purity of it, you want to go fast. So when there was the competitive side of me, that was what probably was really, I don't know, there was kind of a...
Well, there's something about getting in a flow when everything's moving with the other, like when one part of the body's moving with another part, where you enter a flow or a rhythm state and you're just on.
Yep. And I think that's why I love, or I probably transitioned to why I love what I do now.
Mm.
Because it's kind of trying to hit that sweet spot or get other people to hit that sweet spot more often.
Yeah.
You know, like finding a broader platform to hit that almost every round rather than just on those rare occasions. Oh,
it gives you so much confidence when you're in that zone. You feel invincible. I think the last podcast I had a long run where I was like that. I'm like, I could do anything I wanted feeling like this. That's the feel that I think you'd... That hooks people to go running.
Well, even as you say that, like I generally got like goosebumps because that's the field you're trying to chase all the time.
Yeah.
So if you can, and obviously we'll talk about it later, but if you can try and use the movement to allow that to occur more often,
yeah,
happy days. Yeah. You know, that's what you want.
So, what do you do?
That's a fair question.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I specialize in running technique. It's probably become a little bit more movement-based. Like I love seeing...
So, sorry, we'll go back. You are a technique coach?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so specialize in just the technique. You know, like, you know, it's a piece to the puzzle of what you're trying to build or what anyone's trying to build. It's no, you know, more or less important, but it's a really important one that probably hasn't been done really well previously.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just specialize in that, you know, like I kind of leave the other bits and pieces to the professionals in those fields and just focus on movement, running technique, improving it. And a big part is the self-awareness and the teaching of it.
Yeah. Okay. And that's the balanced runner. That's the business.
That's the balanced runner.
Now, how did you form an interest in that first? And then how are you different from a traditional physio gait assessment process? So if you go to a physio and they decide that they're going to look at your run technique, how do you differ from them?
So two parts.
Yeah, yeah. First, let's do the first part.
Yeah.
How do you develop your interest in it, and how did you learn it?
So I went out running when I was about, I think I was about 18, 19 again. And then growing up in Canberra, going out into the fire trails, I still love going back there. You know, Christmas, same fire trails around, you know, Mount Ainslie, Mount Majura. And I was just running just to go for a run and just started to be aware of how my footsteps sounded. So not about where I was landing, how I was landing. It was just the sound that they were making. And it was two very different, distinct sounds. And to me, they were. Whether they were to someone else, I don't know. But to me, they were very distinctly different. And
left to right.
Left to right, yeah. And how, which to me, it was like, well, they're hitting the ground in a different manner, which meant a different angle or a different movement. I think, well, that doesn't make sense, you know. Running being a bilateral movement, they should be pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you know, all things really great, symmetrical. And they weren't. And I just remember for the rest of that run, like working on using the upper body to actually change what was happening in the lower body. Like that was just my instant thing. It was like, well, I can start to influence surely what's happening down there by thinking up here. And it did. And it started to change. And I started to kind of think, okay, what is that specifically that was doing the change? And that was where the real interest came. From then, going back to like the hockey training, we had a speed and agility coach for us, like through the ACT Academy of Sport, a guy called Lex Anderson. And I was telling him about this, like I was out running, I'm doing this and I was changing this. And he's like, this is great because this is kind of where I'm moving as well, like that efficiency of movement, whether it be speed or endurance. And from there, we just, you know, we struck up a really good relationship and over time kind of developed how those small cue-based changes actually influenced the movement and the position in how you hold yourself in running. So it's probably over about 20 years of, you know, practical experimentation on ourselves or on other athletes to the point we start to understand how all these different cues can actually affect it. So that was kind of the initial interest was me out running, and then how I kind of learnt to do what we do is through time, experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long process.
So is there some sort of ideal that you work towards?
Not specifically. Like there's themes and theories, but there's not really an ideal, like because everyone's shape, made up, angles, all so different that you can't really put everyone in the same kind of box. And it's about what is the most efficient movement for that individual. Whereas I think historically, running in particular, it's like, hey, this is it. Let's fit everyone in that box. And these are the theories that it should be. And if you can't, then it's just, that's how you move.
Mm.
Rather than thinking, well, how do you move? What's influencing those movements? And how can I change you individually? Which I think that's kind of the big difference. And that's why I only work one-on-one with athletes. Or very rarely do I do anything more.
Yeah.
Just so that I can actually focus on that one individual, their discrete movements, their language, their learning style. You know, like it's all so individual.
Yeah. And okay, so you've sort of come up, this is your own, you and Lex, this is sort of a trademark philosophy.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it really is.
Innovators, yeah. Pioneers.
There's not a lot. There's small parts that I see in other theories that have some similarities, but broadly, very different.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how, the second part of the question.
Oh, yeah.
If I went to a physio and they went through a traditional gait assessment, what are they doing differently to what you do?
For starters, they're probably doing it on a treadmill.
Mm.
And we run on a
treadmill. They definitely are, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're doing it on a treadmill where the ground's moving for you. So it's a little bit different for starters. Using, you know, a video normally, an analysis, and then breaking it down into a real strict kind of, and this is a broader sense, but into a biomechanical kind of movement, which is more focusing on hips down, what angles, what knee lift, what extension, what, you know, hip drop, where are they landing? And it's kind of more of that lower body focused, and then trying to match it to the biomechanical best that we learn through, you know, the sports science, like where should you, what angle should you be getting at? How should this be moving? Is there stability? What's, you know, what's happening through there? And then an assessment is made from that, and then you get the information, and then it's like, well, you should move your leg straighter, or you should do this and you should do that. And whilst that's, you know, good information to have, like there's a big gap missing. Firstly, what is influencing it, and how do you get from where you are to that next point? It's not just a matter of, okay, well, this is how you move and that's how you should do that.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So there's the big gap, and I think there's the difference between teaching and coaching and being good at it, or just being regurgitating information.
Yeah.
So mine's very much, it's one-on-one, it's on normal ground, and it's cue-based changes. It's not just, okay, from A to B, there's A to B.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a bigger gap.
Yeah. And so what are the biggest misconceptions? Because as a runner, and we'll get into our initial conversations first, but I see a lot of poor advice given about running technique, and it normally focuses on cadence, foot strike, and that's typically the end of it.
Well, I think that's the important word that you just said, the end of it. Like, that is the end of an extremity. You know, like, feet are at the end of the legs. The legs are pinned into your hips. If your hips are moving, if they're doing something, you can't expect to change the feet, how they position, how they move, and therefore how they land, if stuff above is actually working in a manner that's not helpful. So I think, to answer your question, like, it's all outcome focused. You know, like cadence, if you've got a low cadence, you've got to work out, why is it low? It might be you move perfectly, but you're just running slow. You don't need to match a higher a cadence just because the number says so. Because if you've got really long legs, it's going to take you longer to get through a stride than someone really short. Like, you've got to take into consideration the actual individual. Or is the movement, meaning you are taking longer to get through your stride, resulting in a slower cadence? Just by increasing that cadence isn't going to change your movement. You're just going to do the same movement more times and a shorter amount of it, you know?
Yeah.
So accumulative, it's probably a similar outcome, but you effectively think, oh no, but I'm just doing, you know, shorter little things. So I think traditionally the coaching has been outcome focused rather than what is the stimulus that's actually creating your position or your movement to create that outcome, which is how you land, how you move, the number, the pace even something as simple as pace, like movement and energy dictates pace. So rather than just trying to change your pace up and down, it's like increase or decrease your movement. As a result, the pace will fluctuate. And then that's where you become efforts and tempos or thresholds, whatever it may be.
Mm.
Think about the stimulus rather than the outcome.
Yeah, okay. So the biggest sort of mistake you see is outcome-focused gait assessments.
Yeah. And then also, you know, traditionally there's been a way or a thought process of what is important to coaching, and it's been done for 40, 50 years. However, emphasis or importance placed on running technique has been pretty low because that's been the same thing for so long and it hasn't worked so much. Say comparably to a swimming or even a cycling or every other technique known to man, technique is important except for running.
Yeah.
Because we're still using the same old school stuff and thinking that you know, drills are going to change how you move. Good warm up, they could be used as a stimulus or as a cue really well. But they're not actually going to change anything if it's just done. Saying, well, why am I going to change my technique if it hasn't been done? Don't worry about it. You know, so still using kind of old school thought process behind it and fitting into a, you know, a round cylinder into a square hole.
There's definitely an older school mentality of we all run differently. There's no best way to run. And so why do we need to change it? And is changing it, if I don't have an injury, going to help me in any way? And I know that sort of grinds you a little bit.
Half, because we all do run differently because we've got different body shapes, you know, a different length, different heights. But that doesn't mean that we can't improve the manner in which that individual runs themselves.
Yeah.
You know, because the emphasis or the rhythm or the timing can all be changed and all be improved to create that symmetrical movement or landing, whatever it may be. Like,
you gave a great example of, say, Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
When he was beating everybody, he doesn't stop working on his technique.
No.
Yeah.
It's like, he never got to that point where he's going, cool, technique's done, I've locked in, and that's going to stick the same way forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. Every technique, whether it be running, the golf swing, is fluid. Even if you've got it at this real optimum level for you, it could just kind of skew a little bit. You might get a blister from a, you know, poor pair of socks, or something gets in your shoe, or just get a little niggle, or you land funny and awkwardly on it. All of a sudden, you can start to change your movement pattern to protect it or to hide from it. It doesn't take long for running before that becomes a part of your movement pattern.
Yeah.
You know, you go for a 5K run, it's 5,000 steps. So it's 4,000 to 5,000 repetitions of a movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to start to relay in your movement pattern.
That is a repetitive.
Yeah.
And what, 3 to 4 times your body weight every time?
Yeah, sometimes more depending on the pace or, you know, the terrain. So if anything, running's even more fluid because of how repetitive the movement becomes the more you run.
Mm.
So it's almost like, okay, we can get you, you know, take a little bit of time to get you to this really good movement. But then it's just about maintenance then because, you know, the Tiger Woods thing, he might change his hand a little bit. They go, oh, that was a poor shot. And you start to figure. And us as humans, 9 times out of 10, the meaning that we give something is incorrect, whether it be a movement or a text message or, you know, we read something, the meaning we give is probably wrong. So all of a sudden, the movement we give is probably wrong as well. And so that's the kind of the fluidity of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you see when you run around the tan? Or you go down to Hunter because you're part of Hunter and you look around. What is the biggest mistake, the most common issue that you see with people's running technique?
I think the two things. One is that effort equals speed, or effort means effort or tension means speed or strength or power. You know, so rather with running, the faster you go, the freer you need to be, like to allow movement to occur rather than
like more relaxed kind of.
Yeah, it is. It's a relaxed. I try not to use relaxed too often, similar to what we spoke about this morning. Like, I didn't say to you relax this part or whatever it is. It's allow a freedom of movement. And yes, you will have to switch muscles off, or you'll have to kind of increase a movement rather than relax. Because even that, relax, some people go, okay, well, my hands drop because, oh, that's relaxed. But it just changes everything. Like, again, the meaning we give it. So it's being really specific. I think it's just, okay, I'm running faster, so I need to put more in.
Yeah.
And
you tire a lot more. We see that a lot. I mean, everyone's experienced that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Myself as well.
Like, yeah.
Because I think we've got this innate nature to think, okay, I'm trying to run, and the only thing I can really influence is the upper body, so I'm going to really try and muscle it.
Yeah.
But we're actually going further away from where we want to be. It's almost like we need to set our lower body up into a position, into a movement, to let them do what we want them to do. Because even then, we can't even force them. It's like, we want to go quicker. But even then, we've got limitations to it.
Yeah.
Whether it be fitness or speed or power, whatever it may be. But setting them up to allow them, the bottom half, to do it, rather than actually thinking you've got any influence of
more.
Okay. The other one would be to... that they're trying to change again or manipulate an outcome. They land.
Trying to hit their forefoot.
Yeah.
Like without, someone told them they should run on the ball of their foot rather than their heel, and that's what they're focusing on.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And look, it's the wrong part to look at. Like, I don't look at the strike, but I don't change the strike because it is the outcome. And if you change from a heel to a forefoot, you're still making the same mechanics. You've still got a braking force, but now you've got it at a pointed toe. So you've added another lever, and you're placing the load or the pressure through, you know, like Achilles and calf, and a braking force.
Yeah.
And it just creates different problems.
Yeah.
You've still got the same problems, and now they're just placed in a different area.
Yeah. So give us a rundown of how a session looks. If someone comes along to a balanced runner, personalized session, how does it roll out?
So I guess the structure of it is all pretty similar. Like it's especially with the one-on-one stuff. So when I'm seeing someone one-on-one, with the online stuff, I like to get them to give me a video so I can actually break it down a little bit better. But the one-on-one is turn up, you know, do a little bit of warm-up so I can see their movement patterns. Then the next three stages are probably the really important ones. The first one is, you know, self-awareness. So that's actually getting the individual to match their perception with your reality of their movements, and highlight any differences, you know, side to side, you know, left and right. If they got right or left side dominances, how their body positioning is influencing everything in their movement. So they start to feel the discrete movements that they make when they run, but also how that affects speed, efficiency, possible injury. It's kind of telling a story of where they're at and getting them a real kinesthetic awareness of what that feels like to them. That part's really important because you spend a bit of time then getting them to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst for them it's like, okay, well, I get it now. The next part, when you give them a cue, and it's one cue at a time, get them feeling relatively comfortable with the cue. It's still really fresh and raw in their head, so it's new and it's different. But then the third part is comparing the two. So they got a feel for what their old was like, they can feel what their new is like, and they can individually, internally, understand the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just me saying, you know, on a screen saying, get to this, do that, this is what you should be doing. They can tell. The brain's really smart that once it's actually got an improved feeling, it knows it. It might not be habitual yet. You know, that movement pattern isn't habitual yet. But because the brain can feel it's an improvement, and the improvement comes in how they express it. So normally you're listening to positive words, so whether it's lighter, freer, easier, bouncier, you know, anything along those words or faster, it's them coming to it. It's not me saying, you know, thumbs up, you're doing well.
Yeah.
They're telling me. And that's the real difference between showing it on a screen or telling someone what to do. It's getting them to feel the difference so that A, they know they're improved. Because if someone doesn't walk away from or run away from our session feeling like they're better, then I haven't done my job. Because if the cue doesn't make them feel better, it's probably the wrong cue.
Yeah.
But the next thing is that they can actually manipulate it, maintain it when they're out running by themselves. So they can actually feel the difference. So then there's the next learning tool so that we can do the repetitive movement, which is the running, but now they're doing it in that new manner.
Yeah.
And then it gets into their technique. Then it becomes autonomous or second nature, then they can turn up and we can go on to the next thing. We don't have to worry about the first thing.
Yeah.
They'll have it in the background and you'll always know it and you can kind of go through a checklist sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's not the focus. And there's the learning. There's the real big difference between it.
Yeah. How long does a session normally last?
First or initial sessions about 45 to 60 minutes, just depending on the individual.
Yeah.
And then follow-up sessions normally about 30 because they understand process.
Yeah.
And then it's about, okay, how is it? Let me have a look. Let me have a look to see what's next. Work on what's next, compare the two. Off you go. So yeah. It becomes this real kind of, this is your cue. This is what it feels like. This is what you're doing. Any questions? Do it a couple of different paces depending on the cue as well.
Yeah.
And then off you go for a few weeks. And then it becomes about the individual. Some people pick up on it, you know, within 2 weeks and they're like, go again. Other people need 3 or 4, like whether it be for their own mind or that's fine.
Yeah.
Kind of, again, working with the individual before they feel comfortable rather than just saying, let's go again, let's go again.
Easier to work with a younger athlete or an older athlete?
They both have their positives. Like the younger athlete, you probably don't need to go into as much detail, but they can also be very hard to... sometimes have the dialogue with, because it's like they turn up and they're used to being told what to do.
Mm.
You also want them to get to feel it and have almost like this discussion so I can actually get to know them better and understand the language. But on the other side, it's really easy because you can go, okay, just feel these two things.
Yeah.
Do this, off you go.
Yeah.
You know, and when I'm talking younger athletes, we're talking like, you know, 10 to 18, 16, 18. And then from there, it becomes an older athlete. Cool thing is you can have that conversation. But they're also more detail-oriented and they need it. And there's a little bit more of a, sometimes, a, even though they've chosen to turn up, almost like this uncertainty.
Yeah.
So both positive. Like, it's just understanding what you're going to get and how you need to deliver it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've obviously worked with a lot of athletes, but who are some elite athletes you've worked with? Or sub-elite.
So yourself, you know you're in the elite category, and I'll ask you some questions in a sec as well. But, another Inside Running podcast presenter, Sophie Ryan.
Sophie, yeah.
And again, we'll sort of talk why almost challenged you two, like on purpose. James Hansen, which we'll probably tap into.
Yeah.
Monica Brennan, who was in the 4x400 at Rio. So even into the sprinting. But maybe some of the more movement-based athletes. So Peter Siddle, when he was coming back from his back injury.
Yeah.
Happy to say that he hasn't had an injury since. And obviously a lot of back-related through the bowling. But
how
he was moving, he was almost on an angle to get ready to bowl from the start of his run-up.
Yeah.
Because that was how they were taught. It's like, no, we'll have the ball in position. You're screwing your whole movement and your back up. And he was really interesting that he goes, I need to carry pace through the crease for me to bowl at speed. So if I can't get to it, and he goes, I feel like I haven't been able to produce pace over and over again. And all of a sudden, my speeds just go down too quickly. So we changed that. And all of a sudden, you know, injury free, but back in the Ashes, back in, you know.
You watch the Ashes and you're like, yeah, I did that.
Well,
gets a wicket.
London
McKinnon.
It's like, I'm just going to chalk that up. I'll never get an international wicket, but I'll claim it.
Yeah.
And take it off his. He's had enough. But it was part of me that was really proud because he's bowling at pace and he's getting through it and he's bowling over after over after over. And yes, he's done all his own rehab, not taking any of that. Like it's a 5%, it's a 3%, you know, it's a piece to the puzzle. But it made me really proud that his body was in a position to allow him to then put in the work that he can.
Yeah.
And
Soph, what specifically with Soph did you guys work on?
So Soph, obviously, you know, real petite runner. However, she ran like she was, you know, 6'2", like her arms were out broad and a real staccato step. She didn't have much extension or flight or float. And initially for her, she always said, well, it's just, that's me, I'm smaller and I'll work through it. And in her own words, you know, grind through it. But you get so much more from her to be able to get that freedom of movement. And I remember her coming back after probably the third or fourth session and her the fiance was riding with her and she was, like he actually said, so if you're actually getting extension, what's happening? So I was trying to get her in a position and in a movement to actually create that little bit more from each step rather than having to just do more steps.
Yep.
The other one that I mentioned was James Hansen, which has been really cool to watch over the last kind of 18 months, 2 years, I reckon, 18 months. He's gone from, I think, what was it, like an 804, 3K to a 753, and his consistency in training and his speeds and his time, like, to be able to see someone and for him to actually come back and say, yes, I've trained well, but I now see myself run. And he sent me a video from 2 years ago, the big milers, compared to the one that he just did. And he said, this is chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
You know, like to get that kind of feedback and to see some of the results he's getting. And it's and really cool.
So with the technique changing, is it primarily for performance or is it for injury prevention?
I mean, they both kind of go hand in hand.
They do.
Yeah, and it just depends on the athlete when they turn up too. You know, like if the athlete turns up and they're an injury riddled or if it's like, oh, I've been injured over and over, I need to change something, then the focus is slightly different because, you know, the focus is around that area and how can I fix that and then go off. But if it's performance, it's still improving or decreasing that possibility of getting injury because you're loading in a better manner, you're moving in a better manner.
Yeah.
You're kind of doing it further away from the injury breaking point to get it, but they're all on the same scale. I see it, like, or on the same spectrum. It just depends on where you are on that at the time.
Yeah, yeah, it's still what you focus on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think, so when, we might as well tell the story of how we linked up.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember maybe getting a few phone calls that I didn't answer.
I don't know. I was trying to get your number off Brad from the Sunshine Coast.
Oh, okay. Because
I go up there and do some stuff with some athletes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd give you a call. Because I heard you say something on one of the podcasts, and you mentioned starting to look at all avenues for your improvement. Mm. And I just heard that and went, like, stop it.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, I'm sure they get it a lot. And when you said that, I was like, yep, okay.
Yeah. Well, getting the cold call.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, this bloke's... Who is this bloke think he is? Like, calling up telling me he'll make me a better runner.
Yeah, I'm Moose.
Well, I think there was an hour of me, like, trying to figure you out.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, I'm like, I got to get this bloke off the phone. Okay, let's do it.
It was funny, like, the real reasons to actually target you and so probably 12 months earlier was because it was going to be a challenge. You know, like, I worked with people and you know, developed it and kind of, it was almost like a confidence thing, like a growing confidence. But it's like, well, hang on, these are elite people. They're running fanatics. I say running nerds. Both really headstrong. You know, so it's from a medical background, like podiatrist and feet, and, you know, like medical background, you from, you know, like your shoes and your interest in running itself. Like, there's a real challenge to it. And both really elite runners.
Yeah.
So if I can actually get through to and show the improvements you can get and almost like the easy wins. Like, they're not difficult, like they're easy wins to get each time. Then, you know it's real.
Yeah.
And it wasn't to prove to me that it was actually start to prove to, you know, running, which traditionally hasn't had this technique focus, that actually there's bigger gains to get from what it is.
Well, we see a lot of like technique stuff with sprinting, but it definitely like dwindles away as we get into more distance events.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of the middle distance guys now do work with sprinting coaches, and even team sports work with sprinting coaches to improve that. So it makes sense that like there's a there. But I was very pessimistic because every man and his dog wants to be a running technique coach. Yeah. Every physio thinks they are an expert after doing one afternoon course somewhere or an online thing. And we hear horror stories of that shit going wrong.
Yeah.
So I was really pessimistic. And so when we did our first session, even then I rocked up. I'm like, you know what? This will probably be the last time I do this, but I had to get him off the phone. No, but it was really like for me, refreshing to sort of have you concentrate on things other than the traditional that I thought it was going to all be about.
Yeah.
So,
it was funny, that conversation on the phone as well, like it probably did go for almost 40, 45 minutes. And the first 10 or 15 was that real kind of skeptical thought process, which is understandable, and I was ready for it.
Mm.
But not ready for it isn't, you know, like, but it's, for me, I understand why. So when you can understand, okay, that's okay. Like you kind of work through it. And then there was this like almost like this opening of, oh, hang on. Okay. Well,
yeah.
This sounds a little bit more than what I've done before.
And the difference was you had answers for questions I had. Now that's different from what I've experienced in the past with they've been taught something, but they don't know why they're being taught it. And so you ask that secondary question and there's no answer there.
Yeah.
And I think confidence comes from like, being very knowledgeable in your field and having a strong philosophy and believing in it. And like you were obviously confident. And so that gives other people confidence.
Well, it's funny because we've never actually spoken about the phone call.
No.
Until now.
Yeah, I think I probably sent a message to Brad saying, please don't give my phone
call. Which is fine because, you know, it happened last one for me and then no more. It was funny. I remember getting off the phone and you could see that almost that process through the whole conversation, and then I've got to go, man. Great. Yeah, I'll let you know when I'm up in Ballarat.
Yeah, and it's been good. So what we've worked on, like personally, is probably similar to what others have worked on in terms of arm swing. And from the first session, I noticed a big difference in, like, you just made me aware of shit I was doing wrong.
Yeah.
And immediately I'm like, yeah, why would I do that? And then I guess I said to a few people, I'm like, yeah, we worked on this. And they're like, yeah, you have such a low arm carriage. And I thought, really? Why didn't you tell me in the past?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to know that?
Yeah.
And so that, yeah, It's just being aware, like you said before, being aware of what you're doing. It's just, I never had any concept of thinking about what was going on when I was running.
And funnily enough, even on that first session, and I asked you, you know, what do you feel when you run? What do you notice? What is it that you want to get out of it? And you talked about being in that kind of that flatter movement. And when you start to get out into higher paces, you didn't feel like you could actually come up and out and bounce out. Like it was always just this flat movement. And everything you felt was spot on, but without understanding why you were feeling what you were feeling, and that you weren't allowing your body to actually get that lift, to get that drive, to get that extension because of how you were moving. Like even this morning, you know, watching the session, having to do it indoors on the treadmill, it was almost great in one way that you were just there for me rather than actually having to watch going around the track. But the movement and the bounce you get rather than this flat scooting, it's actually now you're getting some drive, like you're getting some flight and flow.
Yeah, it does feel like that. It does feel smoother and, you know, you're into that flow state more often.
Yeah.
You feel a little bit more like a runner, to be honest.
Yep.
Which is a good thing.
And so many people can see what a runner looks like and that person's a runner.
Yeah.
As in, you can see 10 people who are all runners, but one or two of them are runners.
Look like a runner.
The mechanics they are using is a running mechanic, not just like a mishmash of between running and walking and effort and thrashing and muscling.
Yeah.
There's a smoothness, there's a freedom, and there's an ease to it, even if they're running at high pace.
Yeah.
You can see it, but then the understanding of what is it that makes that, there's probably the disconnect.
So what are success stories that you've had? What's your favorite? Peter Siddle, you've mentioned.
Yeah. Talking about Monica Brennan, the 400-meter run, I mean, she spent, I would have thought, 18 months to 2 years after Rio, injured. Trained for three or four weeks injured. And her, we did our first session, and she went back to the coach, and the coach has gone, we've been trying to get rid of, you know, this rotation for 4 years. Gone in a session, what's going on? And from there, now she's been... You know, we worked together for probably a bit over 12 months, and I actually started to oversee not her programming, but just how it was structured. And so we do technique sessions, but also, well, you know, why are you doing this? To the point now where she's been training for, you know, almost 6 months straight. She's going to do her first track season in the second half. You know, so seeing her going from that to actually being able to run, but also run in a manner that she's now a sprinter rather than just to kick forward a lot. You know, as you're thinking about sprinting at high paces, kick that lower leg forward and create that braking force, even on a sprinting, you know, like seeing the movement change so drastically.
Yeah.
And now seeing her put in solid blocks of training. That's probably one of the big ones. And you know, I only work with two or three sprinters.
Yeah.
There's other ones have been going from one guy, and this is really early on, turned up, he was supposed to have surgery on his shins. He had compartment syndrome and he was a doctor himself, and he's gone to the surgeon, he's going, well, we need to do the compartment release. So he said, look, I can't run a kilometre without it hurting. I've been told I had surgery. What can we do? And within 6 weeks, I had him running his first 5Ks. No pain, no surgery, no nothing. By changing how, not only how he moved, but what he was engaging, what was he holding. So that was probably the two, even real different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
It's both super important for me, and like it gives me real satisfaction.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if you're at an Olympics or running your first park run or second park run PB, the feeling that individual gets is the same. They might be doing it in front of less people, but it's still that individual achievement, sense of achievement.
Well, that answers a question that I had about what sort of level athlete do you work with?
Anyone.
From the
catch the 5K through to Olympians and like yourself, world championships. Look, I see that kind of potential.
I tell people that.
I see the potential. You know, that's where I see.
Come in the store, I'm a world champion.
Yeah.
So, does anyone ever question the science or evidence behind what you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. And I think once someone turns up to do sessions, they're kind of almost invested. But there's still some people who have that, you know, does it help, or I'm just doing it because I'm going to try and tick all boxes. But there's also other people, more maybe whether it be keyboard warriors or someone just going, nah, but where's the studies? Where's, you know, where is it that, that determines this? And the reality is there's a heap of studies, you know, like that show how important and how beneficial it can be. But again, I keep going back to the gap between getting someone towards that efficient movement. There's the gap.
Yeah. I feel you don't need to have studies if the individual feels like it's working for
and
them.
That's the next bit as well.
Yeah. So like there'll never be studies for everything. And even within those studies, it's so hard in the running world to work out injury performance because there's so other variables.
Yeah.
And those people live a sad-ish life. Like, if they can't accept anything that's not backed by 25 years of multiple research papers.
Well, I use the example, and it's probably a poor example, but, you know, a long time ago, bloodletting was the way to get rid of disease. Turns out that was wrong. You know, at some point or another, someone has done something, whether it's the first time or not, that's actually created an improvement.
Yeah.
And the big thing you touched on is that if the individual running does not feel better or doesn't show improvement, then there's probably a reason for
it.
But if they feel better, there's a big reason for it.
It's the same with shoes, right? So there's no study that tells me that this shoe feels better for me to run in. There's no research that says that. I put it on, run in it, feel great, love it. I'm going to fucking wear it.
Exactly.
So I'm going to go see you. I'm going to feel better running. I'm going to enjoy my running more. And I don't have to have some dumb non-running scientist sitting in a lab saying, no, there's nothing that says that's right.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's right because I'm doing it.
And it feels better.
Yeah.
And I'm not injured.
Exactly.
I'm faster.
Just don't claim that you're going to save everyone's careers and you'll be fine.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, you do best with the individual because then there's still other influences. You know, if they go to the gym and they hurt themselves or overstress themselves and they go running and they get injured.
Yeah.
It's not movement related, or it could be overloading, whatever. Ugh, that's what... Yeah. There's so much to it.
Yeah.
One example I got told by I don't want to say like where or what profession, but he mentioned he came to one of my like a demonstration and he saw the whole thing and he even said, he goes, look, there's a huge improvement. Like you could see they were moving better, they're getting more knee drive, they're getting more extension, they start more still, you know. But the research I've seen is if you change this, there's an immediate decrease in efficiency. And I was like, you just saw and you just told me what you saw. How do you know that the study that they did, they made the correct change for that individual? How do you know that they did the right change? He goes, well, I just kind of assume that.
Yeah.
There's your problem straight away. Like, you've assumed that it was a correct improvement. There's only one correct improvement, not six, because he's like, there were six different changes. Is that not enough? And it was to do with an arm swing. It's like six different changes in arm swing. Of course, you might have got all of them wrong.
Yeah.
You get the right one. What did you see?
Yeah.
And there was this, as you said, like they're limited by this confirmation bias, which is study rather than real world.
Yeah. Feels.
Yeah.
Yeah. So online assessments, you do them?
Yeah. Yeah. And even that was like, it was a random occurrence because quality, pretty much my number one value, like being able to deliver the quality to the individual who is coming to get it.
Yeah.
I always wasn't sure if I could do it on an online manner because it is so detail-oriented of being able to actually see and speak to an individual. It wasn't until about this time last year that a guy in Canada who is triathlete, he's actually got like a big triathlete following from like a YouTube channel or something, got in contact with me, said, could we do it online? Sure, why not? You know, like, give it a go. And it worked a lot better than I expected for two reasons. One, because I could actually hear movements he was making in real time that I don't hear. Like, I'm not in your head. I'm not listening. You're going away and coming back again. And I can hear some of them, but all brief. Whereas his, I could hear. So the different medium allowed me different stimulus to be able to understand the movement.
Yeah.
And even from his session, then it kind of developed it to a point where it was like, send me the video so I can actually break everything down into what I see. And then it's about doing almost the exact same session over Bluetooth, so I'm always talking to them, and get them to feel what I see in a much clearer version, which is the videos,
yeah,
and then deliver the technique. So then I had to kind of just be really confident in how I delivered it in a more verbal tone, because I can't actually get hold and manipulate a movement or a position.
Yeah.
It's like getting them to touch a piece rather than me. It's just kind of developing it.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of working out how to actually deliver the same quality in a different manner.
Yeah.
And it's kind of gone from there. And it's I actually really enjoy that as well, because you're engaging with people all around the world now.
Yeah.
But still being able to deliver and get them the outcomes that they want, which is running better, running freer, running faster, running injury free. Yeah.
Outcome, eh?
It is. But I'm focusing on a different area. No, I don't. I like the outcomes, but I don't like focusing on them.
In Australia, in person, who do you service? What areas?
At the moment, Melbourne's the base.
Yeah.
Come to Ballarat, even though it's bloody cold every time I come here. Brisbane and Sunshine Coast. They're probably the ones that I work to on almost like a 6-weekly kind of basis.
Okay. Yeah.
And then online from outside of that, looking towards Sydney. Maybe try and do a New York trip. it becomes pretty difficult when it comes to that, because then it travels all over the place. But they're the ones that I service regularly.
Yeah.
In a one-on-one capacity. And then it's outside of that's online.
And what best contact? So who, someone hears this, goes, yeah, I want to run, feel better. Where are they contacting you? What's your medium?
One being Instagram, easy to contact through there, or website being thebalancerunner.com.au.
Yep.
There's inquiry sheets, so it's real informal as well. So you can kind of just go, just give me the details. What is it? You can send through the details. And it's kind of, I always leave it up to the athlete, because I got to make the decision themselves. Like, I hate the sales side of it. I hate anything like that, just because I don't think that's not the important part.
Don't mind a cold call though.
Yeah, that was a challenge to me. That was actually a challenge to me. I didn't mind a cold call. I've done that. I've only done that once.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure. Ballsy, I like that.
Yeah, and
I might just start calling people and say, "Hey, you need some new shoes."
I reckon that's the way to go. Yeah, but you got to see it as a challenge. Like, if it was me sales, I would have hated it, and I wouldn't have done it. But it was. I want to challenge myself to improve my ability. So where am I going to go?
Very good. I'm glad you did. I'm seeing results, enjoying how I feel running. So,
And if that's not almost like, if that could be the only outcome from it, the only thing you get from it, pretty good.
Yeah.
But what you feel is like the improvements, the movements,
feeling smoother.
Yeah. It's pretty good. None of this low carriage, the ass scooting along the ground.
Efficient though, isn't it?
Well, not really. I've been sitting a long time ago. It's always saying, I'm going to be saying, oh, I've got the same pace for a 5K as I do in my marathon. It's just longer.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't get that high end pace.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
No worries.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. When, hit up Paul if you want to get better, faster, more consistent.